the question was asked, how are we to understand that our sages discuss whether something is biblical or rabbinic? Either it is or it isn't. And the answer to this, I you want to expand on it? I'm with you, yeah.
I understand there can be a machloket, but
how could we give ruling in such a machloket? So let's introduce the concept of how there is a machloket in that, and then maybe it'll be easier. Maybe. Maybe not. We always said in the introduction to question and answers and all our learning together of Jewish thought that this is a starting point. If you don't like what you hear here, go somewhere else. And there are other classes, other rabbis. Laila Tov. So, first we have to know concept that the Maharal expands on, but the more you learn, the more you'll see it so, that when the Torah was given, God put within the Torah allusions to rabbinic institutions. There are verses that you read them and they seem to be clearly indicative of rabbinic institutions. One is next week's parsha. When the pasuk discusses the procedure of purification after our war with the Midianites, some of the things that the pasuk refers to on a simple level refers to actions which we know are rabbinic. Actions of purification. So the fact that the Torah is going to allude to something doesn't necessarily indicate that it is biblical. Now, most of the times it does, but not always. So that automatically leaves us room for standing there puzzled and saying, wait a second, is this biblical or not? So usually we say, yeah, the Torah said it, it's biblical. The Torah said, thou shalt not steal. Okay, that's biblical. Honor thy father and mother. That's biblical. What about giving clothing to someone that needs clothing? So, we say it's biblical. It falls under the canopy mitzvah of doing acts of kindness. Visiting the sick, we say again, falls under that canopy mitzvah. But you could understand that there are going to be things that are going to be borderline. What about giving a get? The Torah says a person can, if he doesn't, for whatever reason, he may divorce his wife. Is he performing a mitzvah when he divorces his wife? Or is that just permissive? The Torah says, this is a legal contract, you can do that. The Torah says if one's ox kills someone, he has to pay a certain amount. When he pays that amount, is he performing a biblical mitzvah? So not everything that the Torah tells us to do constitutes a mitzvah. The Torah gives us laws, and part of the laws are mitzvahs, but not all of the laws are mitzvahs. So even within the Torah's framework, not everything that we read is a mitzvah. The Torah says if one sees his wife acting in a frivolous fashion, he can warn her, please do not go alone with this man or that man or whatever. Is that a mitzvah or isn't it a mitzvah to say that to one's wife? Machlokas, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Akiva. The Torah says when you purchase a slave, then he should be your slave for eternity. Is that a mitzvah or isn't it a mitzvah? The Torah says a kohen, when his relative passes away, he should become tamei for that relative. Is that a mitzvah? Let's say the kohen says, I don't want to become tamei. I don't want to go to the funeral. Two opinions. Every example I gave, the last three examples, are Machlokas, Rabbi Yishmael, and Rabbi Akiva.
Is Shabbat a biblical or
rabbinic?
Because the other ones are like conditional.
But
this is like, yeah, this is a mitzvah. Those are
laws. Oh, according to one opinion, it's a mitzvah. There was a Kohen whose sister passed away, and it was the eve of Passover. And he said, why should I become defiled for her? They're going to bury her without me too. Why should I lose my ability to bring the paschal offering? And his brothers, the Kohanim, pushed him and shoved him and said, you have a mitzvah. Your job now is to become defiled for your sister. For a Kohen, yeah. Possibly for Israel too. For a Kohen, yeah. So that's a mitzvah. We wouldn't think it's a mitzvah, but yes, it's a mitzvah. The Torah says, V'dibartabam, say these words. Is the Torah referring to all of the Torah? You should constantly be talking in Torah. One opinion says yes. Is the Torah referring to that parsha of Shema? One opinion says yes. How do we rule? We know we have a mitzvah to learn Torah. Does that mitzvah come from those words? V'limatem osam es b'neichem, from v'dibarta bam. Which words does it come from? When the Torah says that we're supposed to understand, is the Torah referring to this parasha of Shema? Say it every day and understand it? Or is the Torah referring in general, learn Torah and understand it? Two opinions. So from there stems the argument, okay, so is this second parasha of Shema, is it biblical to say this parasha? Or was the Torah referring to learning Torah in general? Learn Torah, understand Torah. So you see where the argument comes from? So now how do we rule? So we have rules and how we rule it. It's interesting that the Torah gave us the power to define the Torah. Torah says an eye for an eye. No Jewish court ever took out someone's eye when he took out someone else's eye. We have a tradition going back to Moshe Rabbeinu that the Torah meant evaluate in the ways that we have a tradition how to evaluate how much you pay for an eye. If someone took out someone's eye, he pays for that. He doesn't get his eye taken out. What I'm saying is that when God gave the Torah, He didn't just say, read it and do what it says. God said, read it, and I'm explaining to you how to understand it, and I'm giving you rules that govern how you will define it, but, bottom line, those rules are in your hands. The Jews, when they accepted the Torah, they said, Naseh v'nishma, we want the Torah. When God said, listen to the rabbis, this Torah is going to be defined by the rabbis, the Jews said, we don't want it. That's what it says in the Medrash Tanchuma. The Torah Shevichsav, God said, I have a written work, keep my Torah. The Jews said, fine, Naseh v'nishma, whatever you say, God, we'll do. Then God said, yeah, but I'm going to make rabbis, and they're going to explain to you how to follow the Torah, and what they say goes. Oh, then God had to pick up the mountain over them and say, take it or you're dead. So, okay, fine, what can you do? The Jews didn't want that. It's understandable that they didn't want it. It hasn't changed. It's a tough thing. We say in Purim, the Jews finally accepted it willingly. But in general, it's a difficult thing to accept.
They finally accepted it before. Like, Empire story for Purim, or the date?
The period of Purim, not the specific date, but King of the Kivlu. The Jews accepted what they had initially accepted by force. Now, after the decree of Purim and the being saved from Purim, the Jews finally willingly accepted to be under the rabbi's guidance, which was a turning point in Jewish history, which is a different discussion. The implications of that brought us into a new era in Jewish history, a new era as far as Torah's involvement as well. But the Torah was given with this framework that the rabbis have to learn the Torah and master the Torah and master the rules of inference, and at the end of the day they have to decide, and part of their decisions are going to have implications as to the biblical rulings. When Rabbi Gamliel says that we take witnesses and we tell them, testify, today you saw a new moon, and the witnesses say, we didn't see a new moon, and we say, testify, you saw a new moon. So they testify, and then we say it's a new month. And along comes Rabbi Yeshua and says, what do you mean it's a new month? It's not Rosh Hashanah. Yom Kippur is a day later. You're telling all the Jewish people to fast one day earlier. The Torah says you fast on the 10th of Tishrei. How can you make the 1st of Tishrei today? No, there was no new moon. I know with my astronomy, they did not see a new moon. These witnesses are liars. And Rabbi Gamliel says, I don't care. My tradition is that God said that the courts have to define when the new month is going to begin. Even if witnesses don't walk in, we can take witnesses and tell them, testify, and that's a technicality. Bottom line, we decide. So what does that mean? That means that God gave it into our hands. God said, you run the show. It's true, the Torah tells us how to behave on Yom Kippur. But who defines which day is Yom Kippur? God gave that into our hands. By the same token, God gave into our hands the definition of all of the Torah. It's an extraordinary strength. We lost much of that strength. We lost it as the generations evolved, as we discussed on Sunday, going from the time of Moshe to the time of the first temple, to the time of the Tanoim, to the time of the Amoraim, to today. Each generation loses its ability. We reached a breaking point between Tanoim and Amoraim, but at the end of the day, that was the godly intent that we would have that power. And even today, we have issues which, according to some opinions, are biblically prohibited, according to other opinions are rabbinically, and according to other opinions are permitted. you could have issues of Shemitah, you could have issues of is there Kedushas Eretz Yisrael here today? Are you allowed to go up to Har HaBayis today? There are still questions that are remain hanging to this day. Okay, so you see, there are issues that remain hanging to this day, that still can land either on this, either on being permitted or forbidden or biblical or rabbinic. Yeah, yeah.
I remember reading the Rambam and he brought us the, and then the quote in the bottom talked about it actually happened, where a guy came to Israel and he went up to the Rabbi to make to build a mizbeach and make a sacrifice. But then the rabbis talked to him, and the reason why he didn't build it was because he wasn't sure if he was going to build it with the right dimensions. But that halakhically, he thought it was permissible to build one.
Well, we're allowed to build a sacrifice of Pesach offering.
Pesach offering is an exception. Pesach offering doesn't need a mizbeach. To build a mizbeach, you need, you have the problem of going up to Har HaBayis, and you also have the issue that a mizbeach can only be built based upon the testimony of a Navi. A Navi can tell us where to build a mizbeach. Without that, we can't build a mizbeach. That's a separate issue. Carbon Pesach doesn't need a mizbeach. We could bring carbon Pesach now, yeah. Theoretically, we could. Why don't we is a good question.
Does anybody do it?
No. But it, there is testimony, it seems, that there were generations that did. There were generations of Jews that did bring Korban Pesach after the destruction of the temple. There is such testimony. And there's discussion in the Chasam Sofer, among others, as to whether we should or shouldn't today. Yeah, it's discussed.
But as far as making us alter...
That's a separate issue. Mizbeach involves going into Har HaBayis, which according to some opinions is prohibited in our state today. And it also involves knowing where to put it, which we don't know.
But I think this, my question is, Rambam, from what I remember reading, said that you can make a mizbeach.